You're listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast from Top Music. Tune in weekly as we interview music teachers and experts from around the world to explore creative activities and ideas that build learning connections in students. Our integrated music teaching approach will deepen your students' understanding of musical concepts, engage them in critical thinking, improve their reading and performance, foster their curiosity, and prepare them for a lifetime of music making. Well, hello, teachers. It's great to be with you for another episode of the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. It means a lot. I know some of you have listened to many, many episodes. And for others, this might be your very first episode. And if that's you, in fact, if either of those people describe you, then welcome to the show. I'm Tim Topham from topmusic.co, and it's great to be able to hang out with you for a little bit of time today. Now, for those of you who are regular listeners, you'll know that this month is all about advanced teaching, teaching advanced students, I should say. However, we're going to take a little break from that topic today with a special episode with our Top Music friend, Mike Grundy. This is one of the most powerful and positive episodes that we've had in a while. We've got some great stories coming your way. Mike always just has this knack of giving me a buzz. I don't know about you guys. He's been on the show before and we always get positive comments. Just the way he goes about explaining things and talking about his passion of teaching teachers and coaches and music academies and students, of course, just has a way of giving you a bit of a boost. So I do hope you find that from today's episode. Mike Grundy, if you haven't met him before, he's the founder of Rock Out Loud Live and the owner of two elite music schools in New York and in New Jersey. In November 2019, after spending over $650,000 building out his New Jersey school, Rock Out Loud, he was told that he had to close due to COVID-19. As the music education world went to Zoom for virtual music lessons, Mike decided to accelerate the production of his own virtual music lesson portal. And you've heard us talk about rockoutloud.live, which we're big fans of. Rockoutloud.live is the world's first virtual music lesson portal designed for music educators that was 3 years in the making. Good timing, Mike. When Mike is not rocking out at one of his music schools, he wears his corporate suit as Chief Technology Officer and Chief Information Security Officer for a specialty financial institution on Park Avenue. Welcome back to the show, Mike Grundy. It's so great to see you again.
It's great to see you. It's always great to see you. And like you said to me earlier, I think you look younger every time I see you. So it must be the Australian air.
Oh, mate, I don't know how you do it. You're a little bit older than me and you get younger every time I see you, I swear. Anyway.
I appreciate that.
Well, it has been a while. We obviously spent a lot of time hanging out during the pandemic as you were building Rock Out Loud Live. So it'd be great to get a quick update from you on how that's been going, but also how your studio is going.
Studios are going good. I don't know if I told you, but I think it was maybe afterward. I'm on my third music school now. One of these music school owners decided to sell their school in Florida. And I was looking, were the reason why I did this. Remember you said buy then build?
Right.
I was reading about it. And then I said, Tim, that's a great idea. You sent me the book. I bought it. And a week later, I bought the school.
Okay. Wait. All right. We better just wind back for a second so people listening have an idea what we're talking about. So you came onto one of the groups and you were talking about, I found this studio that might be a good one to buy, but I really like building from scratch. And I think that's when I said, well, hey, I just happened to read this book called Buy Then Build. So do you want to give the super quick premise of the book?
Yeah, the premise of the book is that there are so many businesses that are out there that already have clients. They already have students in this case. They already have coaches working for them. So if you just take it over and you just make it better, you build it from there. So you start from, instead of the ground up, you're starting already in motion. So I took on a school with already 50 students and three coaches, and the place was built out. So I hit the ground running. So it's been, instead of losing money for the first year, it was like I'm at least basically breaking even in building. And I bought the book literally when you said it, and I read it on the flight going to see this place in Florida. And within 24 hours, I was in contract based on that book and your recommendation.
There you go. What an influence. I didn't even realize I had.
You have no idea. Without reading that book, I probably would have been hesitant and said, you know what? I got to do it my way. But because I read that book, I became profitable the moment I took over that lease and the keys.
Well, now you've done it twice, building from scratch on your own.
Yes,
once, I did. Buying something and building from there. So if you had the opportunity to do it again, which way would you go?
I would definitely buy and then build. So in my way, in my world, I have to make things perfect. And it takes a lot in terms of lease negotiations and then building your clientele after you've built something from scratch and you're starting a brand new where nobody recognizes you. There was a lot of recognition. This place has been in business for 9 years at the time. They already had their students and coaches. They had a great reputation, excellent Google reviews. And then taking it over and then making it mine in the sense that I turned the teachers into coaches, which was amazing. And I rebuilt it to look and had that same feel and style that I've had with my schools. And that was the reason that we were so successful. And I just moved it over to Florida. It was great. So I would totally recommend if you have the opportunity to buy a school, definitely buy a school.
And you've been able to use the same kind of approach as has worked for your schools in New York. Did that work in Florida or was it needing a bit of a change? Because of, I mean, they're quite different states, right?
Oh, yeah. A lot of the differences were simple. Like, for example, I firmly believe that you never put a child behind closed doors. I have windows and glass doors for every one of my rooms. As soon as I took over the week later, I went and invested $2,000 in all glass doors so parents can feel more comfortable. And that really developed some rapport with the families that were coming to us. They felt more comfortable, and so did the kids. And then I integrated IMAX in all of the rooms so we can integrate GarageBand. And then we put in mixing boards and microphones. And, you know, everything was now recorded. Lessons were recorded as well. And there was a beautiful band room. And I said, well, what do you do with the band room? They're like, we have five bands, one band a week. So I said, you guys do live streaming? We have a great sounding room here. They're like, live streaming? I said, yeah, let's do live streaming. So I invested in a recording studio with OBS and HD cameras, and each band live streams once a week. And that's developed those bands to help market their band. So now when they do shows, instead of getting 20 people at a show, they have like 100, 150 people because everybody knows them. They're all watching them and they want to see them live. So we really took it to the next level.
That sounds very much like Mike Grande and Rock Out Loud. If you want to know more about Mike and his background and the schools he's already built, then do check out our other episode. We've recorded a few times, actually, we've been on and recorded interviews. So there's lots more background to it. Mike's an incredible entrepreneur. And there's lots we can all learn from him. So we'll put some notes in our show notes for today's episode about links to some of the other recordings that we've got of our chats with Mike. Now, you've mentioned a couple of times already coaches, and that's one thing that we want to talk about today. And look, you've always got a million things going on. You've been to Africa. You've got Rock Out Loud. You've got Rock Out Loud Live, your streaming platform. How's that going, by the way?
We're in 174 countries.
Wow.
We clocked in 2.5 million minutes per month on average now, which you put do the math. And I know that because I'm paying for each one of those minutes on my own. So I thank you, but you know, it's an amazing platform. We just did another big push and the big update and the things that we can offer. There's two different schools. There's one school of thought where they want a lot of cool things like emojis and stuff. We really just focus on the audio quality and the back end stuff. So people are like, well, what are you doing? We don't see a lot of push for the front end, but the back end where we're the only company, we're the only virtual platform that uses geolocation. So we can find a teacher and a coach and a student and find them as close as they can. So we can reduce the latency by 65%. So playing that real duet, it comes more and more closer to being real time, although it still have delay, but it's the lowest than any other platform. And every platform in the world now captures all the data and information of all their students and teachers. Us, it shows us on the website, on Apple's download. Data never collected. We're the only company, a virtual platform, that does not collect any data on the student side, which I think is really important. So people like that, the security, the low latency, and the high definition audio. So it's been awesome.
That's very cool. Considering how you started and the amount of work you did and all those demos and everything, I'm just delighted.
You were there. Yeah, we were part of that together.
We were testing it. I was just delighted to hear how well it's been going. That's at rockoutloud.live, is that right? Yeah, fantastic. Go check it out if you haven't already and you're an online teacher or looking to do that. All right, so I want to come back to this coach. You've mentioned the word coach a few times and so you've got a new book out which I've recently read, and firstly, wow, Mike, I was moved to tears with your stories.
on multiple occasions.
I really appreciate that. I mean, you really touched me. When I read that in the morning, I was touched that you took the time and read it. Thank you.
I couldn't actually stop reading it once. I thought, oh, look, I've got this interview coming up with Mike. I better read, you know, the first chapter or something so I know what it's about. And then I was like, oh, this, I couldn't stop reading. So we'll tell everyone where they can get your book later on. But it was amazing to read your experiences. And a lot of it is based around, obviously, your own view on what makes an incredible music instructor or coach or whatever we want to call them, but also your experience in Africa, this amazing trip you did, which sounds really life-changing, both for you, but for everyone that you impacted. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how on earth a New Yorker came to be spending time with music teachers in Rwanda?
So I say this in the books. I watch television like Beverly Hills Real Estate, and I don't care about, you know, the houses or anything. I care about what those people do for a living, because I always don't want to associate myself with people that are much smarter than me. So I was watching this episode. This beautiful actress from Beverly Hills, her name was Mary Fanaro, said she's looking for a house in Beverly Hills. And the first question is, well, what do you do for a living? And she said, well, I build schools in Africa, specifically music schools. And I told my wife, pause the television. We paused it. I Googled her and found her. And we finally connected. And I'm like, if there's anything that I could do, because she's not musical at all. I said, if there's anything I could do to help you, this is my world. So I'd do anything to help you, you know, with these children in Africa. And she said, well, you know, I kind of do. Like, I know nothing about it. So we started to talk from there. And then I said, you know, I don't have teachers, I have coaches. And she's like, listen, you're a Brooklyn guy. You're a, you know, Italian guy with a big mouth. You can't go to a country like Africa and tell them you're going to be a coach and not a teacher. This isn't basketball. I'm like, listen, that's my only thing. If you can say, you know, I can go in as a coach and teach these teachers how to be coaches, then you got me, and I'll do it all, and I'll pay for my own way. And she agreed. And so it was one of those things where she's got a music school, but she wanted to have the curriculum, not just in her music school. She wanted to do it for the whole country of Rwanda. And for 7 years, she's been unsuccessful to do that. So I said, I will write a pilot program that converts these 16 teachers into coaches. And I will prove to the Ministry of Education for the country that this is what they need to do to get to those kids, to get to the next level. She goes, listen, we'll give it a shot. And if you want to fly in, we could do it virtually. But if you want to fly in and do the pilot, you're more than welcome. So I wrote the pilot, I flew in, and the rest is history. They absolutely loved it. So we can get really granular into what's going on, but there are so many tools that I've shown in the book that people that are reading the book could say to themselves, well, I really am a coach and I'm not a teacher. And in fact, I could start utilizing this kind of stuff. So it was just a great experience. And the children of Africa, and they don't speak a word of English. They have beautiful smiles. They don't know what it's like to be loved because they don't get that attention. But if you can grab a kid and hug them and then they finally hug you back, man, your heart melts and you want to do everything for these kids. And it was the most touching experience of my life. And I hope to do it again one day, but it was a touching experience.
I like how you don't do things in small ways, do you, Mike? Straight to
with a name like Grande, I have no choice.
Straight to the Ministry of Education, and that story is quite interesting. In the book, you tell the story of when you first met the minister and how you were able to keep, I think it was him engaged in that conversation. But look, let's get back to the premise of the book, which will have teachers bristling, because to be honest, it made me bristle at the start. I'm like, am I a coach or am I a teacher? So let's talk. There's a few different words we could give music teachers: teacher, educator, mentor, instructor, and you've chosen coach. And coach, of course, for everybody listening and for me, and probably in every part of the world, has a sporting connotation first and foremost, right? So what is your take on these different words and why have you settled on coach?
So it was tough enough because my dad, who's a PhD in education and taught for 40 years, he said, Michael, you're wrong. We're not coaches.
I loved hearing about your dad.
I'm like, Dad, I'm writing this book to convince you you're wrong. So the reason why I chose coach, so I'm going to ask you the definition of a teacher.
I'd say a teacher is someone generally who has a degree, a training, and they're either teaching The first thing, if I think of teacher, they're teaching in a school. So they're teaching a classroom and they're following a curriculum that's set by a government body. That's if we're going really basic.
That's of course, fair.
Teachers can be, as we know, one-on-one in music lessons as well. But that's my first thought when you say teacher.
So when I ask you what a coach is, it's a definition?
Coach would be a person who works generally one-on-one with an athlete in order to maximize their performance.
So if you take down that word athlete and choose musician to maximize their performance, I'll ask you, for your children, would you rather a coach or a teacher?
I would rather a coach, yes.
Yeah, so I love having people answer their own questions. So that's how I strongly feel. So I'm gonna set the stage here. I'm in a village in Rwanda, Kigali, Rwanda. I get a stool in front of 16 people who have never seen me before. And I jump on top of the stool and ask everyone to raise their hands if they're a teacher. And they all raise their hands. And then I said, raise your hands if you're a coach. And nobody raised their hands. And it took me one full week of 8 to 10 hours a day to finally have them convince themselves. My job is not to convince you. As the definition you just described, you said, well, for my children, I would prefer having a coach. And when you think about it, teachers focus on teaching. Coaches focus on the student. That's how I define it. And I think that's the most important way us as music, you want to call them educators, but me as coaches, is if you focus on a child, to me, that's what a coach does. You find their learning behaviors. If somebody can learn kinesthetically, visually, audibly, you need to find their learning language. And if to do that, you got to be a coach. You got to understand them. And then once you do, you focus on that particular student. It's not like the curriculum or a standardized test. To me, that's ridiculous. Each person is an individual. So to me, to be a coach is to be somebody that focuses on the student.
I think as I read through the book, initially I was like, what is Grande doing? Honestly,
that's what my father said.
Yeah. As I read through it though, I began to see the point you were making, and I 100% realized that by your definition, I have always been a coach and I've taught in schools for 20 years. You told a number of stories. I didn't realize you were a trained classroom teacher. And in fact, you in the book, you describe a number of experiences of your student teaching and some of the different ways you tried to bring the coaching style of teaching, I guess, into the classroom. And you made other people bristle at the process of doing that, of course.
Yes,
just imagine you doing that. But as I was reading this, I felt an absolute kindred spirit with you, because in my classroom teaching, I went to great lengths to go, and I was teaching, I taught a number of subjects, but maths was an obvious one where here's the curriculum, here's the boring way it's always taught. And I went to so much trouble to think of engaging ways to get every single kid involved in maths differently, going outside, playing some random game, you know, finding whatever connections I could to make it more interesting. And I think that's part of this role of the view of the coach in your perspective is going much further than just dictating to the students, right?
Exactly right. So if I was to ask you the question, and from grades kindergarten to fifth grade, who taught you how to read, Tim?
Absolutely no idea. I know what school I went to. I don't even remember the names of the teachers.
From kindergarten to fifth grade, who was your favorite teacher?
I can't remember any of them.
You don't remember a single teacher?
Not in my primary school, no.
So was secondary?
Secondary, yes, for sure.
Give me a name.
I remember Mr. Walton.
Okay. So, Mr. Walton, could you tell me one of the topics, subjects, or lessons that he's taught you? Or could you remember how he treated you or made you feel? Because usually you don't remember what they teach you. You remember how you were treated.
Yeah, I think that's fair. He taught English.
Okay.
In about my year, I think it was year 10. And I remember him, he definitely gave me a passion for literature that I'd never had before. But I can't exactly pinpoint what he did, but he made an influence on me that stuck with me I still remember him today.
You see that?
Yeah.
So the point that I'm trying to make is you don't remember the things your teachers taught you. You remember how you were treated. And that's my strong argument, because You know, I don't remember who taught me how to read, but I could tell you that Mrs. Don in second grade would smile when I forgot my homework, or she would pat me on the back when she saw I was a little anxious, you know? Yeah, those are the things that I remember. You always remember how you're treated. To me, a coach can connect to somebody. And I feel strongly that unless you've developed a rapport with your student, there is no way your student will ever be able to learn at the highest level with you. So we do things. There's three things. And if you read the book, there's three things that you can do to develop rapport that will not only develop rapport with you and the student where you can connect immediately, but it also extends the life of their lessons with you. So the retention exists and maybe quadruples. And there's three things. There's the focus. So when you walk into any of my music schools, you have a crowd screaming. It's a sensor that literally goes off screaming like they're rock stars just walked in. Yeah. The pause. In fact, if you go to my virtual tour on rockoutloud.com, you can actually, when you walk through the door, you hear the screaming as you're being, you know, recognized as a rock star. So the reason why we do that is we have to make sure that we break their focus. If they're focusing on failing a subject, having a fight, breaking their iPhone, parents are upset with them.
Not practicing.
We want to make sure we change their focus. And the second is the language. We want to make sure that we understand that they could be feeling anxiety. We might say something like, "You were so great. We're going to kick butt today, man. Are you ready to rock and roll?" And they're going to get really psyched and get ready to rock and roll. And the third is the physiology. If you get down on their eye level, so if they're like 8 years old, you scooch down on your knees and you give them a high five or you give them a pound. That's the physiology. If you can get those three things the very first time you meet a student, that student will connect with you beyond any other measures that you can use, whether if you're Eddie Van Halen or Mozart. They will connect you on their level. And that we found in my schools, it just extends the retention exponentially because there's a connection where the student doesn't want to come to learn piano. They want to be with Tim Topham, who's a great piano player, and learn some of their favorite songs. That's what it comes down to. So for any school business owners or anybody that teaches music and listening to this podcast, if you can develop rapport using those three, focus, language, and physiology, if you can use those three, the first time you meet a student, there's a good chance you're going to really extend the longevity of their lessons.
Hi everyone, I wanted to take a moment to let you know about an amazing community of music teachers ready to welcome you over at Top Music Pro. Top Music Pro is the global hub for music teachers looking to connect, learn, grow, and be challenged in both their teaching and studio businesses. Community members save time by accessing hundreds of step-by-step lesson plans, creative teaching frameworks, business guides, online courses, and workshops. We offer training in topics as diverse as music technique, lead sheets, website building, intermediate repertoire, group teaching, and special needs teaching. We also save you money through our extensive discounts, including those with Music Notes, Sheet Music Plus, Music Room, Office Depot, Tonebase, and many more. And if you like sheet music, all our members get a free book of studio licensed, beautifully engraved sheet music each and every month. As a valued podcast listener, you can check out the Top Music Pro community free for 14 days by heading to topmusicpro.com, clicking Join Now on our studio tier, and using the special coupon code IMTPOD23. That's all one word. So that's IMTPOD23. We can't wait to welcome you inside.
That simple act of crouching down when speaking to a young person, you bring up a story, one of the ones that did make me emotional, about the five-year-old or seven-year-old.
Yes, five-year-old. Wow, you randomly, really did read the book.
Randomly walked past your studio in New York and you happened to be there on a weekend or something. Tell us that story quickly because it's
magical. My friend's dad, who was very close to me, passed away and his actual funeral was five blocks from my music school and it was over at 11. I was very emotional, by the way, and I had to just get away and my school didn't open until 2 o'clock. So I go to my school and I just figured I'd clean up. So I go in, I lock the door behind me and as I'm cleaning up, there's a knock at the door and I look and there's this woman with this little boy who looked like Robert Plant. He had long, blonde, curly hair and he was such a cute kid. And I opened the door. I said, "We're not open yet, but if you'd like to come in, can I help you?" She said, "Yeah, my son, he loves music, but I don't know what instrument he wants to play." I said, "Well, you've come to the right place." So I said, "If you'd like, we can take him around all the rooms." So I got on my knees and I said, "Okay, give me," I gave him a high five. I said, "Let's go and rock and roll. We'll play all these instruments." So we went to all of the rooms and the last room was the back room, the piano room, played a little piano. I got on my knees. We'll call him James. I got on my knees. I said, James, you played really well on every one of these instruments, but what's the instrument that you want to learn? He looked at me and he said, want to play the drums. At which point the mom starts to cry. And as a music teacher, I know what it's music coach rather. I know what it's like. I'm like, it can't be that bad. We'll use pillows. We can use practice pads. I know it can get really loud. She's like, no, you don't
She's
understand.
She's freaking out said, about the noise, right?
Yeah. And I'm like, no, my son's a drummer. I know exactly what you're going through. She goes, no, that's the first time he's ever said any words in his entire life. Now, this was October. He just started school in September. He's been through therapy. He'd been through doctors. They couldn't diagnose him, and I'm not diagnosing him either. But I really, truly believe that getting down on my knees and making that eye-to-eye contact was probably the first time he was not looking up at somebody who was talking down to him. Now, that could be psychological, but I'm speculating. But that, I feel, is one of the most important things to develop rapport, is to get on your knees if someone's, you know, at that height. So in Rwanda, I had a whole lesson on rapport, and I did that. At the end of the class, this woman came up to me and she said, Mike, can I talk to you privately? I said, yeah. And her name was Waya. I said, well, how can I help you, Waya? She said, well, you know, there's only two people that we can get on our knees with in Rwanda. And I said, who are those two people? She said, the king and God. And I said, well, I'm not either of them. So you can at least crouch down. She said, yes, I can crouch down. But that was the way that we do it. So I didn't understand their culture. But when we do that with children, you don't think that they're always looking up and being talked down to, even if it's a positive way to talk down to somebody like, hey, you did great today. They're always looking up. But when you get at that eye level, they feel that some kind of camaraderie with you. And that's a great way to develop rapport.
Yeah. And rapport is, I mean, this is just good teaching in many ways. And that's what I kept thinking as I was reading the book. I'm like, yes. What Mike's talking about is what I do. But I do realize that it's not necessarily what everybody does. And it's certainly not what everybody in classrooms do. The other thing I wanted to mention is I've written a fair bit on engaging boys in particular in education. And I've had some pushback more in recent years about segregating the sexes and even mentioning this. But I want to mention this because one of those rapport builders that you mentioned is super critical for boys, because the research does say that boys learn best from teachers who they feel love them or really like them. And that simple act of crouching down, getting on their level, is just one element that any teacher can learn. The great thing about what you teach in the book is that it can all be taught. And if you're a studio owner who has multiple teachers under you, you can teach them these are
absolutely
it's not something that you're born with. You can learn these skills and improve your coaching, right?
Yeah. And also anchoring, by the way. So I did this study and I wanted to see if it was going to work, and I did it with my son first. Every time, so my kids had to play music. We suck at sports, by the way, Tim, so we had to play music. So as my son was learning songs, I would tap him on the shoulder every time he did great. I said, great job, Sal. Great job, Sal. Great job, Sal. But if he didn't do it right, I wouldn't do anything. I wouldn't anchor it. And before you know it, after a couple of weeks, I would pass by and tap him on the shoulder. And every time I would tap him, he would say, thanks, Dad. And I would just, in passing, tap him on the shoulder and he'd say, thanks, Dad. So that anchor becomes almost like, well, every time I do something good, I get that anchor. And that's important too. So you, as you're developing rapport and you anchoring, people are going to concentrate more on doing it right and practicing, because they want that significant tap on the shoulder, like that a boy. And we did that all the time with like fist pumps in Rwanda as well. And that worked amazing. There was another one. I don't know if you remember this part of the book with the box and the mirror.
Oh, yes, I do. Powerful. Yeah.
Yes. There was
we don't want to give away everything, but if you want to share that story, that would be great.
Yes. Yeah, you should check that out. That's in the book. That was a really good way to develop rapport too.
You really do have to read some of these stories. Was a lot of the activities that you came up with, it sounded to me like you were thinking on your feet a lot over there. You responded. You have an ability, Mike, it seems, to respond incredibly quickly to a situation in an educational context. Would that be right?
Anybody that grows up in Brooklyn has to have that ability to. Anybody. So the answer to your question, yeah, you got to really know the audience and you got to be very cognizant of what's going on. And I attribute that to being a Brooklyn boy. But, you know, my dad was a fine educator. And every time something would happen, he would pinpoint something and he would always mark things and say, this is what's going on. So I'm astute to all that stuff. I'm very cognizant of my surroundings. And especially when you're reading a room and you have 16 people who did not understand your language most of the time. So I had to be very, very animated, which I have no problem doing. But the more animated you are, the more it attracts to them. So you can pinpoint things a lot quicker that way as well.
I wonder whether teachers listening who haven't read the book might be thinking that the word coach, while they can understand what you're getting at, which is that coaches will focus much more on the student one-on-one, get to know them, build things for them, be really specifically focused on the student, which we're lucky to be able to do as one-on-one. A lot of us teach one-on-one lessons. We're in a very lucky situation to be able to do that. But I just wonder that some of them will feel that the word coach is a lesser term than teacher, at least in the general understanding.
I'm so glad you asked that. Teachers, or I should say teachers, people, parents who come up to us and said, oh, we want this teacher. And I'm like, we don't have teachers, we have coaches. And then they said, no, this is a music school. Aren't you teachers? And I'm like, no, we're probably the only music school that doesn't have teachers. We have coaches. And they want me to explain. And that's when I asked them, I said, could you define a teacher for me? And when they say it, and that's why I asked you, when they say it and they hear the words coming out of their mouth, and my final question is, what would you rather have for your child? They're like, wow, you know what? I'd rather have a coach. So for any teacher that is skeptical about using the term coach to identify what they do, just figure out how you can explain that to somebody and have them say it back to you. And then listen to what they say, because in fact, I would venture to say that most of the people that listen to your podcasts, maybe if all feel that they really are coaches. Maybe they were defined as a teacher, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, and that just stuck. But my goal is to, if I can get the educational system to redirect the word teacher to coach, I think there's more ownership in the person who's being that coach, because now you're entitled to make sure that you can connect with each student. And that's a big heavy lift, you know? So maybe that's probably, teacher is such a generic word. A coach to me is one-on-one. That's just the way I feel, I suppose.
One of our top music pillars is student first teaching. It's one of the things that we recommend, we encourage, we teach teachers about, that idea that teaching is no longer in a classroom or music studio is about dictating and just setting stuff, curriculum, using the same books, telling students what to do. It's just not what students need anymore. It's not good teaching. Good teaching builds curiosity and inventiveness and creativity and all of those kinds of things. And we're strong exponents of that. And so I was trying to think, you know, what are a couple of distinct things that a music coach listening in their studio could do, or a music teacher who wants to become more of the coach could do to make that shift. And I was just thinking while you're considering it, one example of my own would be, I've always encouraged teachers to ask students what their top 10 pop songs are at any given moment, and to go away with that list, find one that they think they could teach them, and then help the student learn that song. And I think that's a coach. Would you say that's
100%? And the first question that we always ask as coaches is not what we want to teach, what you want to learn. So I might say to you, Tim, what's your favorite song? Maybe it's an Ed Sheeran song. Yeah. Well, let me show you an Ed Sheeran song. If you can then find out what that student wants to learn, that's your first direction to becoming a coach, because it's not what the teacher wants to teach. Because remember, teachers focus on curriculum, they focus on lesson plans, and a coach focuses on the student. So the very first, if you want to try it, the very first statement should be, or question should be, is what's your favorite song? The second one is what's your favorite artist? The second one maybe is what's your favorite song that you want to learn? As soon as you get that mentality that it's about the student, you're now transforming yourself into a coach, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. And if the song is something, or the artist is one that you don't know, don't say, okay, who's that? Or that sounds weird or whatever. You'd say, wow, we better listen to some of this together. Can you show me some? Like,
help. That's exactly right. Yes.
Jump into, engage with that that discussion, right?
Yeah, 100%. Our schools are a little bit different. Like people say, well, what do you guys teach here? I'm like, we teach confidence, but we happen to do it through music lessons. And
Say that again, because that's very cool.
So when parents are like, well, how do you teach here? Do you use music books? I said, well, we teach confidence. And they're like, no, what do you mean? I said, well, we teach confidence and self-esteem, but we happen to do it through a music lesson. And then the second part of that is, well, how do you do that? And my response is always, we encourage children or our students to get up on stage and play, because we do some really big performances. We do them at the Stone Pony, where Bon Jovi plays and Bruce Springsteen. We do them in New York City, where at the Bitter End, where Lady Gaga and Taylor Swift started and Jimi Hendrix played. I said, if you could imagine your son or daughter on one of those stages playing to 350 people, imagine what it's going to be like the next day when they got to do a book report for 30 kids in front of their class. They're going to be like, I got this. So that's the confidence. Yeah, that's the confidence that we build. So we do these shows 3 times a year, and we really focus on giving that child the ability to perform. And if they can't play it, we simplify it. And if we can't simplify it, we choose a different song. But getting them on stage is so important. And then we do this big thing in November. Every November, we do a Mateo's Mission, where we have a charitable event where we feed families for Thanksgiving, who would not have eaten if it wasn't for the money that we raised. So we work with a local church. And I say to the parents, we don't want you to hand us a $10 bill and say, put this to your charity. We ask the children to come and hand out these baskets with us. So we go to this church with hundreds of our students. We fill these baskets of turkey and stuffing and gravy. And we see these children hand these baskets to people in need that would have otherwise not eaten for Thanksgiving. Do you know what that does for your community? You know what that does to that child? That becomes community leaders when they're 15 and 18 years old. Those are the kids that we're developing. And it's more of a mission that we have. More of a mission than it is a music school at that point, because it's life skills, it's music lessons, it's getting that confidence and self-esteem to a level that they've never seen before. I mean, just the hugs from the parents that we get after these shows, just it's worth its weight in gold, Tim.
I love how you make me think, and I'm sure you'll make the listeners think, about what you're talking about is redefining the purpose of music lessons. In the same way that an airline is not in the transport industry, but in the, what is it, the relationship or the reconnecting industry or the love of family industry, you're saying, yeah, we teach music lessons, but the purpose, what is the actual purpose? And I want teachers listening to really think about this. And we've recently been running our Top Music Certification cohort, and this was one of the first things we did in one of our first lessons, is really get teachers to think, what is the ultimate goal of what they're trying to achieve? And you've defined it as confidence and self-esteem. And I want teachers listening to take that as an example and go and think, just spend, even press pause now, spend 10 minutes. What would your words be that define what you do at the absolute root ground level? I think that's really powerful.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, to me, that's the mission statement above all is if you got to know your why. And be honest with me, Tim, I could tell you, I probably taught about 500 people how to play. Out of 500, maybe 5 have become real big rock stars. So there's let's call it 495 just regular students. And you're not teaching every single person that walks into your music school. You're not teaching them to be great musicians or rock stars. They just want to do it because they just love music. So it's what else they're getting out of it. So yeah, there's that 5 or 3% that are going to be famous and they want to do it for a living, but it's more than just learning how to play guitar. It's just a life skill that you get. You know, socialization happens when you put people in a band that's never met before. So it's all the other things that are part of the music lessons.
Yeah, that social collaborative is another one of our pillars. Like I love asking teachers this question. I'll ask you, Mike, when you look back at your music lessons as a child, and in fact, I know all about them because they're in the book.
Yes.
You'll tell me about Kenny, your teacher, but I wonder whether teachers listening what are the times that you remember the most from your music lessons? Because for me, it was not about sitting with my teacher or doing a recital as much as any time I had the opportunity to play with other people. They're the times I remember, when I was jamming with mates in a band or when I was playing in a band at school, or I was accompanying a singer for the first time, or I was doing a duet with the teacher or something. They're the times I remember. That social factor is really critical.
The things that I think I remember the most was, so just with my kind of, I guess, mentality is I had to be the best. And I guess I wanted him to say I was his favorite student. And I would practice like relentlessly. Now, you're talking about the first two teachers that I had were terrible. And the third one, who became a coach, inspired the hell out of me that I wanted to be the best that I could be. If we could do that for the children that come to us, and they want to do that because they want to feel that certain way, the way that Kenny made me feel, I mean, we're developing a level of leadership in our children that nobody can compare. That's why becoming a coach gets so much more of a benefit than being a teacher. And I would bet you that most of the people that listen to this podcast, they're really coaches, but they probably just don't know it yet.
Yeah, I agree. And that's certainly how I felt when I was reading your book. So I want to ask, as we sort of wrap things up, what the two goals are for you writing this book, in two sort of areas. Firstly, what would you like the teachers out there who are listening, who might be thinking, oh, am I a coach? Maybe I am. Or yes, I definitely am a coach. What would you like the teachers to take away from this? And then more generally, what impact would you like the entire book to have?
Two great questions. I'll start with the first one. What I'd love for the teachers to do is to recognize that it's not about them, their curriculum. It's not about what's written on the paper. It's about the child that's in front of them. The child is going to walk in, and I could tell you that there's a lot, when you're 12-year-old, 13, I have kids 12, 13, well, now they're a lot older, but they were going through so much. If you become their outlet for them to be creative, for them to express themselves through a musical note, whether it's a piano or a guitar or drums, whatever it is, just understand that when you're a coach, you're developing that connection at a level that nobody else can have with them. And you are, you're picked, you're the chosen one. Why wouldn't you want to be the chosen one? Becoming a coach puts you into the chosen one. It's the hero's journey. But you know what? You're not the hero, but you're watching the journey, and you're helping that person, that student, become the best person they can. I believe teachers can do that, but I think those teachers that do that are actually coaches, because in my schools growing up, I had these coaches, but they were inside of a teacher's body, or a teacher inside of a coach's body. And I got to tell you, I look back at them and I'm like, those were coaches. Those really connected with me. I wanted to be a musician because of my particular coach, or I loved art because there's an art teacher who was really a coach that really drove me to be the best as I could. So if there's anything I can get out of this book, is to understand that student is going to come to you for a reason. They want to express themselves. Get to know them on a coach's level. Develop rapport. Understand where they're coming from. And if they can't read the notes on the paper, maybe they're doing it audibly instead of reading it out of a paper, you know, maybe they can use their ear. Maybe they can just close their eyes and feel the passage instead of playing what's on paper. So you can get inside inside their soul. And I think when you make that connection, they'll remember you forever. And that leads me into part two. The reason why I felt it was so important for my final chapter, chapter 7, to be written is because I was looking for Mr. Kaplan. And Mr. Kaplan was my art teacher / coach in the 6th grade. And he has been on my mind for decades. And last year when I thought of him, I looked all over Facebook, Instagram, because that's where all the teachers are from back in the day. And I learned he died about 7 years ago. He passed away. And my heart just sunk because I was never going to be able to thank him for when he pulled me over in the lunchroom and told me to add that little yellow flower to make my 99, my picture a 99 instead of a 96. And it really, really bothered me. And the goal that I want out of this book is, don't wait until there's some sort of death in somebody's our lives, where there's a coach or somebody that was a mentor to you and it becomes a eulogy. Don't wait for that. Do it now. So I make it a point to pick up a phone and call somebody and say, hey, Kenny, man, thank you so much for all you've done. And Mrs. Pettit, man, you were awesome to me. Without you, I don't think where I'd be today would be the same place. And Mr. Cornell, you were awesome. And just if I can end this podcast anyways, pick up your phone. It takes a minute to send a text or a minute to make a phone call or a minute to send an email, and just thank those people who were the coaches in your lives, because maybe tomorrow you want to thank them and they won't be there. Coaches live for legacy. I live for legacy. I don't live for money. I don't live for anything but having to know that I did my very best to support that particular child. And there are tons of children that I've supported. So just thank them. I guess that's what it comes down to.
It's a beautiful sentiment to finish on, I think. Mike, I'm not going to try and add to it. What a fantastic conversation. I've really enjoyed this. I think our listeners will similarly get a lot of value from it. So have you got a link to where your book is at the moment, or should we put it in our show notes?
Well, I will get it. I think I will get it through BookBaby. But before we end this, could you tell me if Mr. Walton is still with us?
Yes, I believe so. Last I heard, he was in teaching in Germany. He had a German background. And I think I probably emailed him maybe 5 or 10 years ago, I think, and we connected.
What do you think it would do to him if Mr. Walton literally gets an email from Tim Topham, I mean, the famous Tim Topham, and said, hey, you really inspired me. I just wanted to thank you. I mean, that would probably put him over the moon, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And in fact, he's an example of someone who does know the impact he's had, and I've told him so, because he actually gave me my first teaching job. He was a school principal, he ended up being. And he was an inspiration for me to become a head teacher. That was a principal. That was my goal. And I 100% wanted to be him when I first started teaching. I don't want to be a principal anymore. A little bit, not quite my thing. But at that time, I looked up to him 100%.
Yeah. And that's important that you let him know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a good reminder, and good reminder to everyone else listening to do the same thing. And also just ask that question of yourself that Mike asked me as well. Tell me about the teacher you remember most from high school, because it'll put a smile on your face. 100%. It did for me, as you said it would in the book, I think.
Yes.
It really does put a smile on your face when you think back to the amazing teachers, coaches that have impacted you in your life. So
thank you, Tim. like my father, I'm going to convert you, I promise.
Where should people go to find out more about your schools and Rock Out Loud? We mentioned rockoutloud.live. And what about your schools?
Rockoutloud.com. You can see that. I also have the musicbox.rocks in Florida and the SI school, Staten Island School of Rock in New York. And I think my book will be on BookBaby. It's self-published. It'll be on BookBaby. It's also going to be on Amazon. You can get it whether you're in the States or not. So you can download it as the Kindle. But I will put that, I should be getting all that stuff by the time this is released. So I can send it to you so you can add to the release notes.
Fantastic. And the title of the book?
From Teacher to Coach and Why You Would Never Want to Be a Teacher.
Always controversial, Mike. It's great to chat with you. Thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much, Tim.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that chat with Mike as much as I did. It always inspires me, and I hope you enjoyed his stories too. Would highly recommend, of course, checking out his book. You can find that on Amazon. We'll put links in our show notes for today's episode. Go and explore it. Have a bit of a think. And if that's been a little bit controversial to you today, which I imagine it may have been, just let the ideas sink in a little bit. Have a bit more of a think about it. Are you a coach? Are you a teacher? How does that feel? What does that mean? I'd love to continue the discussion wherever you get your podcast, or if you'd like to send us an email, support@topmusic.co. Or over on the show notes at topmusic.co/episode356. Leave a comment there or on any of our social channels. It'd be wonderful to hear more about what you think of today's episode. Next week on the show, we are launching our Advancing Pianist course. I've been talking about it all month and I cannot wait to get this into your hands. We've designed this course to help music teachers of all levels feel more confident teaching students as they move from intermediate into early advanced repertoire. This is huge and something we've been working on for months, so I'm so excited that it'll be finally available next week. Members, you will have access very, very soon, if not already by the time you listen to this. And in next week's show, I'm going to be sharing some audio clips from the course. The course has got about 25 videos in it. They're all relatively short because we don't want to, you know, make them too long to get through. So they're all about 10 minutes or thereabouts, all on a specific topic. So next week, we're going to give you a taste of some of those videos and also go through exactly what is in the course and what you can expect when you join us. We'll also be unveiling our Black Friday membership sale, where we'll be giving everyone a chance to join us on a discount that even my team is saying I'm crazy to be offering. And we're going to be throwing in 20 back issues of Top Music Sheets. That's 20 times at least 8 pieces, studio licensed, ready to go, all yours. And the first 5 new members are going to get a 30-minute one-on-one with one member of our team, which is very exciting. So make sure you tune in next week. That's over the Thanksgiving weekend. I can't wait to share more with you then and get this course out there. I'm Tim Topham, and until next week, you've been listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast from topmusic.co. I'll speak to you again really, really soon. Have a great week. How do you keep up to date with all the latest trends and research into music education? How do you connect with other teachers around the world and make sure your teaching stays fresh and relevant for students of all ages and stages, both now and into the future? I created our Top Music Pro membership to be the one-stop shop for music teaching resources, training, support, and community, and I'd love for you to come and join us inside. With over 40 comprehensive training courses, hundreds of teaching demonstrations and lesson plans, free monthly sheet music, discounts, and all the business and pedagogy support you could ever need, Top Music Pro is the community you've been looking for. If you're ready to level up your learning from the podcast and join thousands of other teachers in our global network, head over to topmusicpro.com today. If you enjoy this show and want to hear more of our work, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening today. For links and resources mentioned in this episode, visit us at topmusic.co/podcast or check out the show notes. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast, a production of Top Music. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy your week ahead, and I'll catch you next time.